So believe me, I'm going to get to the hat in a second. In fact, the hat's going to be part of the sermon, but in order to get to the hat, since it's important, of course, that whatever you wear be part of your discourse, first I'm going to go to the story and then tell you how the hat that I'm wearing today gave me a different insight into the story that we read this morning. This morning, we read the most commented on story, perhaps in the entire Bible, at least one of the top three or four, of course, and that's the story of the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, where God comes to Abraham and says, take your son as a sacrifice and offer him on the mountain, I'll show you, and Abraham brings his son and others and travels 3 days to the mountain, carries the wood and the knife, and Isaac actually bears the wood on his back up to the mountain, raises the ma'achelet, the knife, which will play a part in a little bit in what I want to say, over Isaac, is stopped at the last moment by an angel, sacrifices a ram, and that's why we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Now that story, which is so extensively discussed in all the religious literature that deals with the Bible, is almost always discussed with reference to two of the participants in the story. There is, as you can imagine, a great deal of discussion about why God would ever ask Abraham to sacrifice his son. And there's lots of speculation about it, but all of it focuses on what God's intention is and what God wants out of this very strange test. The second focus is on Abraham. Why does Abraham do it? Should Abraham have done it? What's Abraham's thought and intention as he does it? What's his reaction after he does it? The least commented on participant is Isaac. It's not that there's no discussion about how Isaac feels about the fact that his father takes him up to the mountain to sacrifice him. But there is relatively little compared to the discussion about God and Abraham. And the discussion that exists about Isaac always assumes in some way that this has damaged him, has traumatized him, has perhaps estranged him from his father, because after the Akedah, Isaac and Abraham never speak again until Abraham dies. The rabbis say that Isaac goes to study at the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. But in one way or another, in part because Isaac's story is so truncated, is so diminished, is so much less than the story of Abraham on the one side and Jacob on the other, because Isaac goes blind at the end of his life, and the Midrash says it's because the tears of the angels fell in his eyes as he lay there on the altar. In one way or another, the commentators always assume that this was the terrible, traumatic experience of Isaac's life, and it makes perfect sense. In order, though, to see it somewhat differently, not because that explanation is wrong, but because, as the sages tell us, shivim panim l'Torah, there are 70 faces to the Torah, no single explanation ever exhausts the possibilities. In order to see it differently, I have to get back to the hat. Now, there is nothing less interesting, intrinsically less interesting, than other people's medical problems. So I'm going to make a long saga as short as I can, but I have to at least give you a little bit of background in order to get back to Isaac. So for close to almost 10 months, since January, I have felt as though the right side of my head was underwater. I kept feeling that there was some kind of fluid on my ear. I couldn't hear very well out of that ear. And I went to a succession of doctors, all of whom did all sorts of procedures and things to try to relieve whatever fluid there was and various complications along the way. But go figure, it didn't go away. So finally, I should give him credit because he's a doctor here in our community and in our congregation. I went to Raphael Nock, who is a an ENT at Cedar Sinai. It hadn't occurred to me. I hadn't thought about it. I would have gone to him sooner. And he said, well, let's find out what that fluid is, which nobody else had actually done. And he discovered, to, I think, not his surprise, but to my considerable dismay, that it was what's called CSF, which means cerebral spinal fluid. In other words, my brain was leaking, which is not a good thing, by the way, in case you were wondering, because brains aren't supposed to leak. But 7 years ago, I had had surgery for a benign brain tumor, and apparently whatever had been opened then had somehow decided to open again. So, as you probably intuit, even those of you who are not medical people, if your brain is leaking, it's a good thing to stop it from leaking. So I had to have surgery in order to do that. And to make, again, a long story short, I found myself a week ago Monday at UCLA Hospital having surgery from the person who had done the original surgery 7 years ago. Let me just say, for those of you who haven't done it, that if you have a choice, don't have brain surgery. It's really unpleasant. You wake up in a plaster cast and you can't move your head very well and you have to wear it for 3 or 4 days, and you know, if something itches, that's just too bad. It's really not. The hospital was wonderful, the nursing staff was wonderful, the doctors were attentive and skillful. The experience was not something that I recommend to you. But when it was over, the morning that I left, which was last Thursday morning, when they cut this cast off my head and they said, you know, go, other than antibiotics for another week and a half or 2 weeks, you're done. I discovered to my amazement as I left the hospital that I felt buoyant, happy, thrilled. Because I had gone under the knife and I was done. Because the trauma of doing it was actually a less powerful experience than the exhilaration of surviving it. And I realized, as I thought about the Torah portion this morning, that for the first time it occurred to me that maybe when the Akedah was over, Isaac was happy. Because maybe he realized that everybody, sooner or later, goes under the knife, literally or metaphorically. That everybody has a trauma. Everybody has a catastrophe. Everybody has some enormous pain that they have to endure, and they are judged not by what happens when they undergo it, but by how they feel about the world when it's done. And maybe we were doing a disservice to Isaac to assume that he was traumatized and terrible and awful for the rest of his life because of what had happened. Not because there's any analogy, God knows, between going through surgery that is designed to save your life and a sacrifice that is designed to take it. But Theodore Reich, who wrote a book about this many years ago, the psychoanalyst, said this was Isaac's initiation ceremony. This was Isaac's essential crisis on the way to becoming a man. He was, until this moment, Abraham's son. But you know what happens after the Akedah? Shortly after that, Isaac grows up and gets married. Isaac creates his own life and has his own children. In other words, this is the barrier he has to vault in order to become Isaac. And maybe he doesn't see it as a terrible thing. Maybe he understands that this is what he has to go through, and since he had to go through it, since life left him no choice, the only choice he can make is how he will feel about it when it's over, when it's done, when he walks down the mountain and has to live the rest of his life understanding the experience that he's just undergone. So, he can be upset and self-pitying and depressed. He can do that. It won't endear him to himself or to others, but he can do it. Or he can feel fortunate and blessed and happy that he's walking down the mountain, because there was a chance that he wouldn't. When Winston Churchill went through the Boer War, afterwards he wrote his memoirs. And he said in his memoirs, there's nothing more exhilarating than being shot at without result. Always loved that. He didn't say it was so terrible I was in a war. He said, no one hit me. How great is that? And there is something much more exhilarating about surviving something than about never undergoing it. And if you can in some way integrate whatever happens to you in your life and not let it diminish your spirit, how much better that is, because the truth is, we're not all Abraham. We're not. Abraham leaves his home, is the founder of a faith, is asked to do terrible and wonderful things, has 10 trials, according to the Midrash and the Talmud, has 10 separate trials in his life. We're not all Abraham, but we are all Isaac. All of us. Sooner or later, everyone goes under the knife. In different ways, at different times, but everyone does. Whether it's losing someone you love, or undergoing a sickness, or watching a child have a crisis. Whatever it is, everyone is Isaac. And the point about everyone being Isaac is you don't get to choose. You don't get to say, you know what, I don't want any trauma in my life. I want everything to be fine. Because the universe, or God, will not listen to you. What you get to choose is, having endured the trauma now, what do I want to do with it? In other words, less about the skill of the surgeon than the spirit of the patient. That's the question. What do you do with it? And so, as I just sort of involuntarily felt like, this is really good, it's over, it occurred to me that maybe Isaac felt that way. Facing a much more difficult, much more traumatic, much more painful test. Maybe when it was over, he was happy. Because, of course, his name, Yitzchak, we always translate it as laughter, but that's not really what Yitzchak means. Yitzchak means he will laugh. So when does he laugh? We're never told when Yitzchak laughs. But maybe, just maybe, he laughed when he was coming down the mountain. Shabbat Shalom.